Following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Hi there, and welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could tune in today, and we will be talking about multiple topics. Near term here, we'll talk about the Texas affordability problem. And it's not unique to Texas, but the article that I had come in earlier today, I believe, or maybe it was late yesterday, has some specifics. So we'll get into that momentarily. Remember that we are not lending or rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice throughout the show. If such advice is required, it is strongly recommended that a professional advisor be engaged. And that's someone that you will then get into detail with about your unique facts and circumstances, so someone can make sure that what you thought you heard, whether it was from us or other shows on the air, has relevance to your unique facts and circumstances. For those of you that may not have advisors that are able to review real estate transactions, specifically multifamily real estate transactions, I would suggest you go to our website at baplannershow.com and complete one of our intake forms. It's step one, form one. And if you'll do that, once you submit that, then go to the link right next to it. This is all on the homepage, to the call link, and you can schedule a call to discuss with us your situation, and we can tell you whether or not we think we can sync up with your goals and objectives. As I mentioned, one of the main focuses of our practice is real estate private partnership syndications involving multifamily, essentially apartments. You know, typically they're large apartment transactions with 100 or so passive investors. But we also work with people that are looking at the small apartment market and realize what I do, which is potentially you can make more money in the small apartment market because the use of your capital is not as diluted as it is if you put your money into a large project where a lead partner, also known as a sponsor or syndicator, there's assorted other terms, but those folks are going to take a hefty pound of flesh, also known as fees, acquisition fees, due diligence fees, debt placement fees, capital raise fees. Let's see, what else do we have? Construction management fees, potentially, if you're doing a heavy rehab, or maybe you're building from land up. You know, we've worked on projects such as that. And then you've got the refinance fees and the ultimately the disposition fee, and that's on top of the promote or the override. And overrides these days may start in the 20% range, but they end up, well, the sky's the limit with some syndicators. I've seen as high as 60 or 70% once they hit a certain milestone, whether it's a certain percentage, a certain internal rate of return percentage, or otherwise get you to a milestone that they've defined as, okay, at that milestone, we reset the sharing ratios between the managing partner or the lead partner, or the syndicator, et cetera, and the passive partners. And so, you know, that milestone actually may not be something to complain about. I mean, at least you're arguing about the excesses of the positive excesses, I presume, of the transaction, the way most of these are structured. But in any event, I am really appalled at times when you just step back. You know, once you get a private placement memorandum on a deal you may be contemplating, take, you know, step back and just take a look. Go to the section in that PPM that talks about fees, and that's very easily located. I mean, it may be a 200-page private placement memorandum, but simply use the find feature in your PDF program. Hopefully you've got one that will allow searches. So on a Mac like I use, it's Command F is the shortcut, I believe, on a Windows machine. And forgive me if I'm wrong. It's been years since I've had to use a Windows keyboard. I believe it's a Control F. And just put in fees. Very simple. And then you're going to be blown away by the number of citations or the number of, quote, fines that pop up. And go to the one, you'll see one that summarizes, excuse me, you'll see one that'll summarize the major fees that will be paid to the syndicator, to the lead partner, et cetera. And now the promote may not be disclosed in that particular table, which is pretty common within most private placement memorandums. You may have to read further to understand the different levels of promote potentially that might result. And again, I'm not anti-fees, but what I am anti, quote unquote, is fees that are paid on day zero or even before day zero. Zero minus one or two, where when, you know, there's been very little substantive work done that benefits the passive. And I'll just ask you this. This is a question you can ask any prospective syndicator. Just ask them, what's the first fee that gets paid out of my capital or out of the partnership's capital? Because these syndicators are pretty sly the way they structure these things. But I can just tell you, there's no lender that's loaning money on a multifamily acquisition where they've given a line item for fees. That just doesn't happen. The fees are going to be paid by the passive partners, and you need to know, when is my money going to go into a fee, or when is the partnership capital going to pay you a fee? And if they say, well, we're going to get a fee at closing for acquisition, your first response should be, well, how much is my fee on that day? Okay, so, you know, all you're doing, you're just trying to hold the syndicator accountable. And you'll hear on the investment webinar, and you'll see it in assorted other marketing summaries, if you will, about how the syndication team, they value their passive partners. Their focus is the satisfaction of their passive partners. It's just a strange thing happens on the way to closing. They forget about your distribution until the partnership has a reason, i.e. excess cash flow, to give you a distribution. Well, how about we start tying the syndicator's distributions and fees to the passive partners as well? And, you know, how about we tie the performance, the cash flows, to the syndicator's fees, and let's see how many syndicators will come clean on this concept, where literally they're getting money without having performed. Oh, I understand they found the property. They did some due diligence on the property. I get all that. And you know what? There's some syndicators out there that don't charge their passives to do that any more than what you might consider a 10 to 50% promote or commission or override, however you want to name it, is. I mean, that's a lot of money already. You look at a deal that's got a $10 million capital raise, let's say, probably about a $40 to $50 million transaction. And, you know, if the promote is 20%, that's $2 million out of that $10 million. That's a lot of money. And I would say that should more than cover, should be ample coverage to cover the pre-closing acquisition work that a syndicator does. And, you know, I just get so tired of hearing syndicators when you ask about those fees, and they act like they've worked harder than you have. You know, I know my clients that are in their 50s and 60s, they've been putting money aside in a 401 or an IRA for 30-plus years. I have yet to see a syndicator that spent even more than probably a year, if you looked at the serious work, maybe even 4, 5, 6 months working on a transaction. So in any event, I'm sorry to go on and on about fees, but after watching the current market struggle and having been decimated by lender fees, which, you know, that's a little different story because the lender actually has liens in place on the property. So you've got a lot less ability to claw back. Those fees are for the use of their money. It's not for having done what you did as a syndicator to get a 20 to 50% share of the cash flow or profits. In any event, okay, well, again, any of you that are interested in having us on board to help you understand what you're signing up for on these types of investments, feel free to fill out the forms and let's have a phone call. We're going to go ahead and take a break. We'll circle back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. give up, oh no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make demands. Look like a woman, think like a man. Be as good as or better than. Gotta woman up and take it like a man.
Okay, welcome back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I wanted to direct our focus to, again, multifamily apartment transactions is what we tend to focus on with most of our clients. And as you know, it's been a rough time for commercial real estate in general, and that includes the multifamily space. That said, there's light at the end of the tunnel in the current outlook, and I wanted to go over some of the current projections, I guess how certain experts, quote-unquote, in the business or in this space tend to read the current market. And the first market analysis I wanted to share, this is actually a couple months old now, but it's from one of the better syndicators in the market, and I like always keeping up with what this gentleman seems to think, and he's got his finger on the pulse, so to speak. He's currently finishing up a second phase to an apartment complex that he bought along with some acreage that was connected. So not only did he end up with 140 or so units on the ground, less than a couple years old, bought them at a great price, even looking back, bought them at a great price. And this was probably close to a couple years ago, or maybe 2.5. But in any event, his assessment is the multifamily industry will soon enter a period of calm waters and steady growth ahead as a number of factors that have plagued operations and investment are finally subsiding. And I would say in general, that's a rational statement. Now, I'm not sure about, I'm not sure how he's defining, and maybe he'll say later on in the article, steady growth. I would tell you that at the moment, and especially in this market, this property, by the way, is located in Lockhart, Texas, which, as many of you know, has more or less become a submarket of the Austin area. It's crazy how close, quote-unquote, that community is come to Austin over the years. And it's been a long time since I've been there. And of course, I wasn't there to look at apartments back then. I'm not even sure they had any. It's been probably 15 years ago or more. But it is the holy grail of Texas barbecue, for any of you that may not be familiar with that. And it's worth a trip or five, as the case may be, to go see some of those barbecue shops. And for those of you that may have eaten at Luling Barbecue down on Richmond, I think it's still there, and maybe not. I haven't driven past it lately. That's a fake. That's like the fake news if you're in the MAGA world. But in any event, you'll go past Luling to get to Lockhart once you take the exit there off of 10. But anyway, so this was a Class A purchase this syndicator purchased. We've got several clients that are in it. And so he's somebody, I'm not just reading something he's put out for the first time. He does these kind of updates periodically, and he's pretty much spot on, or has been for most of the time. But anyway, let's see, where was I? With each passing month, it feels as though the tides are shifting and apartment performance is on the rebound. I would agree with that in most cases. Despite the weakening job market, housing demand remains robust, at least in the multifamily space. It does. Interest rates are almost guaranteed to be cut at the next Fed meeting. I'm not sure after today's jobs report how the market will respond. But in any event, let's see. He believes that we're going to go for, well, let's back up a bit. New apartments are still being delivered across the country, especially in Texas, but the number of housing units being permitted and starting continues to fall, which that's not necessarily a bad thing for people that already own apartments, if you're already in a deal. But anyway, this indicates that we will likely go from a surplus of apartments to a deficit rather quickly in the coming years. Well, again, depends on your definition of quick. I'll tell you the absorption rate in the Austin market is very low, and it is in Houston for that matter as well, because, yeah, we had 20,000 plus units delivered in the Houston market. I think San Antonio had about 18,000 or 19. They got apartments everywhere. Concessions are something we're seeing. They're pretty plentiful. Austin had at least 20,000 units delivered. Maybe by 2022, they were probably at their peak. But after a challenging 2 years, the light at the end of the tunnel is glowing brightly. This isn't to say that performance will immediately rise and that exemplary operations will lose their importance. And that's a key statement coming from this particular syndicator, because he is absolutely a exemplary operator. And he says, in fact, as we navigate the beginning of the next up cycle, I would argue that outperformance will be driven by the best property management and operation teams. We will not be in a rising tide. Let's put quotes around that. We will not be in a, quote, rising tide floats all boats, end quote, scenario that we were just 3 years ago, at least not for a few years. And, you know, that's a time frame that money was easier to borrow, and everybody was a syndicator. I mean, there are people that were out there. They're the ones that have pretty much slinked away, I guess. Been a lot of buildings returned to their lenders. And, I will absolutely second his analysis that the better operators, and I don't mean the flashier ones, I don't mean the more popular ones, the ones that have videos showing them pulling up to a building or hotel or whatever, getting out of a Bentley. Those folks have really taken it in the chin, and some of them are not around. And if it's not their whole operation, it's a building here, a building there, where they did not execute a debt structure that protected against the rise in interest rates. However, this presents a unique opportunity for housing developers and investors in the coming years. I do not expect wide-scale rent control, regardless of who the next president is. I do anticipate new programs to increase liquidity and potentially lower taxes to incentivize the construction of new homes. And I'm sure you're listening to the current campaign stop speeches, where it's mainly on the left side. Ms. Harris, who at times seems to be economically illiterate, I believe is the phrase that I would use, is promoting the concept of $25,000 stimulus type payments for first-time home buyers. California is going even further. They're very close to passing $160,000 stimulus, which, you know, what I don't hear discussed much when you hear about these programs is what about the second month after you move into the home? And that's assuming you qualify for a loan. And maybe that's what they know that we're not, you know, thinking clearly on. Maybe there's not many people that will qualify for the loan, although it wouldn't surprise me to find out they're giving the $25,000 out before they've worried about whether or not someone would otherwise qualify. But in any event, these plans will take different shapes depending on the administration, yet housing development will likely be of huge importance to either candidate if they were to become president. As interest rates fall and existing stock is absorbed, owners and investors will have the opportunity to expand their portfolio with more attractive return targets. Developers will be able to build to improved pro forma figures. Finally, the American people will have access to more housing supply and a more diverse market across a variety of housing types, metro areas, and price points. These factors are coming together to shape a new and strong cycle for multifamily participation. Let's go ahead and do this. Let's take our second break. We'll circle back here momentarily with the last segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Big dreams and faded dreams.
Okay, welcome back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we were just talking about how there's an uptick in the multifamily market in terms of financing that has been tightened up, I guess. It's starting, the dollars are starting to be more readily available. And you've also got some construction that started back, permitting's going on. However, we still have a significant supply because we had so many apartments delivered to the market after the market started to slow, the rates started to go up, et cetera. And, you know, these apartment complex construction projects might take, you know, a couple years or more in some cases to complete and get leased up. So it's not like you can just turn the train around when the Fed starts, you know, tightening rates. So it took a while, but the amount of new units coming to the market, let's say early 2025 is when you'll start to see the number go down considerably. And of course, that will help get the equilibrium back in place where the landlord or the owner will have, you know, more attractive options in terms of leasing. Right now, you're seeing concessions go up somewhat significantly, and it's because right now the tenant or the prospective tenant has the leverage, and that's a bit different than what we saw over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. So anyway, if you look at the rent to buy index, it's the Florida Atlantic University index or study. I guess it's an ongoing research project. It's going to be a while before we're going to see the buy option to be attractive enough to undertake buying instead of renting. And I would suggest there may, it's even if the numbers were such that you might qualify for either one, you're still at a point where you're able to purchase a certain level of amenity that, I mean, I'm sorry, you're able to rent a certain level of amenity. You know, if you look at one of the new Class A apartments with rents of, I don't know, 20 on the low end, maybe $2,250, $2,500, up to on the high end, maybe $3,000 to $3,500. And these are very broad generalizations. I'm not saying you can't find additional options at either end, but I'll just tell you the sweet spot's going to be in that range. And you'll find that for you to buy an equivalent, not necessarily size, but an equivalent level of amenity, you know, the types of amenities that you'll get with that Class A apartment, you're looking at spending, you know, a lot more than the median price of buying a new home. And even if it was the median, I mean, my gosh, the median price of buying a home, and we're just going to use the national average, I believe the latest economic study that I saw had it at somewhere between $410,000 to $415,000. And if I'm not mistaken, the income needed to qualify was a high number. I'm going to say it was $150,000 to $154,000, somewhere in there. And you know, I would just tell you that that cuts dramatically the number of fish that are swimming in that pond, where you might be able to sell or well, in this case, sell a new home to someone buying a home. You know, there's not nearly as many fish swimming around in that pond as the rental pond, where you might have income of, I believe it was about $50,000 to $55,000 to qualify to rent that equivalent amenity set. So I'm going to suggest to you that, you know, the ability to get that higher level of amenity, assuming you know, have a lifestyle that fits. I mean, obviously, if you've got four kids, You're probably not going to find the ability to go rent a apartment unit that, whether it has the amenities or not, would accommodate a family of six, as I mentioned. But in any event, I would suggest that, again, when you look at the average rental, I think in the city of Houston, if I'm not mistaken, it's somewhere in the $1,200 to $1,300 range is the average rent for a one-bedroom, and that's way below what the average mortgage payment, insurance, et cetera, et cetera, would be on a single family. So as investors, you know, is this welcome news? Well, if you're still trying to rent empty units, or even if you're looking at renewals, I would just tell you that this news, doesn't change dramatically the amount of rent you're going to get or the ability to replace tenants any faster. But it does kind of show that there's been a bottom hit, I believe, on the market not getting worse, but before it gets better. And so I think it is welcome news, and I would suggest that now's a good time, because you won't find something overnight that you want to go put your money into. Now's a great time to start looking, and especially if you're looking to buy a small building. Let's say you and a friend, or just you, were to decide you want to get into the market and you're not sure about where to start. Let's have a conversation. Let's talk about the drop-off points, as I see them, in terms of something that you could bite off either yourself and three or four associates. And, when you strip out all the fees associated with these 200 to 500-unit transactions, you may like the bottom line better than what you're going to see as a passive partner. Now, that said, it does also mean you're going to have to be responsible. And I want to use that term, responsibility, more responsible for the outcome than you would be if you had a lead partner or a manager. And in that context, I mean a manager of the LLC that you purchase the property with. So one of your associates, typically. If you're not that person, well, then you're still going to have to be awake at the switch. You're still going to have to keep up a bit more closely with what's going on than if you're one of 100 plus partners and most of the decision making involved in the transaction in terms of managing and operating is in the lap of a third party. So you've got different types of personalities, different types of people, certainly different expectations. And I would suggest that you might even invest as a passive partner in a transaction, whether large or small, first, and understand what management is about, what's expected as you frame out your go-forward options. And then decide. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of small apartments. I believe last time I checked, NAA, the National Apartment Association, claimed that they had over 500,000 small apartment members, and I've forgotten what their cutoff was. It was probably in the 50-unit range across the country. So there are a lot. And there's some websites that specialize in showing small apartment buildings for sale all across the country. And the first focus is to try to figure out, well, what am I about? What do I want to achieve? What am I willing to take on in terms of anything over and above your normal day-to-day? If you work and travel a lot, for instance, you may want to stay with the passive role. The passive role is great in that you never get the late night phone call about a maintenance issue, or you never sign personally on a loan document or a debt guarantee. And I would recommend, or I would suggest, that is a huge benefit of the passive way to invest in real estate. And I know I've been involved or been member of or both in multiple investor platforms, and there's not nearly as much attention given to the potential liability that a partner has when they sign a debt guarantee. And that's a little bit frustrating on my part. I know in some cases where we weren't involved on helping the investor understand what they were signing up for, they, you know, got done with closing, sent us the documents just to have a review, of course, after the fact, and I was blown away by how many times I see debt guarantees that are being provided to a lender. And I'm just telling you, don't do it. Or as Mr. Biden might say, stop. Just don't do it. Because that when you're a 1% or 10% partner, it doesn't make sense to sign your future away, potentially your future financial or your financial future, your future financial future, you might say, unless you're the one driving the wagon. And it may not make sense then. I'd have to know more about the property and the structure and the pro formas, but I'm just telling you, don't do it. If the property is a strong property, you should be able to have the property serve as the guarantee. And, you know, I look at many properties these days where the loan LTV, the loan to value, has gone down significantly from back in the day. And, you know, I would tell you that, you know, if a lender made a 60% loan to value, or a loan based on a 60% loan to value, that deal, unless the property just got beat up in the interim period, that deal should not require a partner to step up and pay off a loan. I mean, there should be enough equity on the property to get through the rough waters, I guess. And I don't know. I've seen, as of late, we've seen properties go back to the lender, of course. But in any event. Okay, well, we're at the end of the show. Thank you for tuning in today. We will return on Sunday, 7 a.m., right here on 700 a.m. with our Cybersecurity Sunday show. We hope you can join us.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.